Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance FIL 240 for spring semester 2026. Today, Foundations of Finance. I will do some background on the subject of stocks and bonds, and then we will spend time looking at the numbers for the first time. Now, every class will begin with this, and I will be pouring information at you at a fairly robust pace. So get good notes down. And on that subject, which I forgot to do in the first class, and I'll have to send out an announcement, is I want to show you your podcasting website where you can get the podcasts of my lectures. I now have the lecture on Monday. Your first lectures are now up and running so that you can now listen to those podcasts and put your notes in front of you, because for the first few weeks at least, you're going to have missing words in your notes, terms and concepts. And if you listen to the podcast with your notes there with you, you're going to be surprised at how much you don't get in your notes. Because as I said, I am dumping knowledge at you at a very high rate. And I don't expect you to get every word down, but you've got the podcast so you can listen to those. Now this is, of course, you're in section two, lecture one was on Monday, so this is where you will get it. You just click on it, and then you can.
Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics.
Shut up, Alan. Okay, it's there. But it's also, if you don't want to be on my own creepy site, you can go over to Apple iTunes, the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium. And as you can see, they've already got the spiders picked up the first two lectures. So there they, the first lecture for section one and yours is section two. You can listen to them over there, just like you can listen to them on my main site. Well, that kind of sucked. Oh, play. Really? Sign in. I'm not signing in. I'm not going to let them see my credentials. I listen to things over there that I don't want them to see. Okay. Anyway, so it's up and running. I just didn't sign into iTunes. But use those. They're not replacements for the class. I'll just listen to podcasts. But in an emergency, of course, if you can't be in the class because of something, that's there for you. It's not as good as the class because, of course, you can't see what I write on the board and all of that. But it is all a great supplement for your notes. So take me seriously when I do that. One thing that I am going through Foundations of Finance. And I will spend time today to bring that to life in the markets. And this will be the first time you hear me say, let's look at the numbers. Before I do that, however, you do have that Excel assignment, which is due shortly after spring break. And you have three different ways that you can meet that get the 100% on that assignment. You can use LinkedIn Learnings, you can use Wall Street Prep, or Udemy. LinkedIn or Learning is a little bit easier, that there is a course there that is the one that you should be using to do this. And if you try to go to that course on your own without doing what we tell you to, they'll try to get you to pay for it. However, as a student at Illinois State University, you get all of them for free if they know that you're a student. That's why we are going to today spend the time for you to see how you link your personal account in LinkedIn to your ISU credentials, and then that world of learning opens up and you can get all kinds of certifications. For us, it's just that Excel certification. And to do this, I will have our teaching assistant, Ms. Springer, show you how it works. And you just do it right here with her, and it's over for you. You don't have to worry about it after that. Without further ado, Ms. Springer. The foundations of finance cover a lot of turf. And I gave you an introduction on Monday. And now I'm going to get more specific with what is entailed in that foundational ideas. And this will go on for half the course. I'll keep coming back and bringing in more foundations. But for the time being, the first thing I want to talk about is what I mean by stocks. When people say stock, I've got stock in this company, or I've got stocks, they are probably referring to one specific type of stock, common stock. There are other types of stock. There is preferred stock. There are some categories of common stock, like tracking stock, lettered stock, founder stock, and all that. What we're used in general, we're probably referring to common stock. However, that is one of a larger category of financial assets, as opposed to physical assets. Now, this one I can break down physical as I can financial. So, for example, you, sir, own a car. It's an ugly car, but it's a car. That's a physical asset. You own stock. That's a financial asset. You own gold. That is a physical asset, but it's a type of physical asset called a commodity. So within the physical assets, there are personal assets, corporate assets, you know, like your factories, your fleets, and all that. But there are also these commodities. And I will bring those, show you some commodities on the screens today. I'll show you gold, silver, copper, oil, crude oil, generic crude oil, Brent Sweet crude. I'll show you some of those, and there are many more. You could have silver. That's a commodity asset. You could have you could have oil. That's a commodity, physical commodity. But you could also have some kind of a certificate for a claim on gold. That's more of a hybrid of a financial asset that is backed by a commodity asset. It can get a little bit complicated, and we'll get into a little of that in this course. It sometimes gives me a headache, all of the different twists and turns that can be done on these. But stock, common stock, represents ownership in a corporation. You bought 10 shares of Microsoft. That means that you and Bill Gates are the same. Not exactly. He's weird. But you're both owners of Microsoft because he owns a ton of the stock, so he's an owner. You own a little bit, so you're an owner. So you have all the rights of ownership. Like you can vote for the board of directors and all that kind of good stuff. And you can get dividends if there are dividends paid out. But there are also another whole animal out there called bonds. Bonds represent debt that is owed by the corporation to you. You own a bond. That means that you own an IBM bond. That means that IBM actually owes you money. It owes you interest payments, and it owes you the face value of that bond. Now, you sell it to this person right here. That means that you are no longer in the game. I, as IBM, now owe you because you bought the bond from him. You're out. You are now a debt holder. I owe you interest and the principal on that bond. Now, bonds, we'll get into bonds a little later in the course. They're actually, there are so many different kinds of bonds, it's almost dizzying. But generally speaking, well, for now, we're going to look at stock in a company. Now, here's the thing. A share of stock has a price that you see. That's not the only price that exists for that. But the one that you see is called the market price of that stock. So, for example, Wendy's is $8.50, quoting on the right now. That is the market price. That is a price at which you would trade in that stock. However, there is another price. You see, the market price is driven minute to minute, second to second, by the buyers and sellers. If there are more buy orders than sell orders, then that price goes up. 2 minutes later, there are more sellers than buyers, so the price goes down. It's just vibrating all over the place. It is what we call a random walk. A random walk has no predictability of the next place. If there's anyone who tells you, well, my model tells you what the price will be in a year, he is lying. This is a physical law of the universe. Stocks are following exactly the same process that atoms and molecules follow in the air. Brownian motion. The mathematics of it was perfected a little more than a century ago, how these random walks happen. And it's actually kind of intense. It wasn't until I was in grad school that we really went into the math of it. But oddly enough, the developer, the one who figured out that there's this universe process called random walks, it was none other than Albert Einstein. Before he did anything with relativity, this was how he made his name, was showing these. But back then they were talking about stocks. They were just talking about particles in a glass of water or molecules in the air and all that kind of stuff. But it's the same process. In fact, most of what you will see in finance is nothing but an application of general laws of physics. And unfortunately, some of that's getting into quantum mechanics now, which is really intense. But anyway, okay, so the first thing is that information drives markets. And it is almost instantly a piece of information, a bit of data, is impounded in the price. You have millions of traders. You have computers that stagger the imagination with their power that are trading every second of every day. To the idea that I can beat the market, no, you can't. In matter of fact, it has gotten to the point now where there are, well, there's one, and we're pretty sure there are others, that can now see a stock price in the future. It was really staggering when we found that one brokerage, one trading house, could see the price about 107 milliseconds before it actually occurred. You can't beat that. In the course that you're learning here, and in all of the finance courses you learn at institutions like this one, which is a world-rated institution in the top 100 in the U.S., we don't teach how to find a stock to buy that you'll make money on tomorrow. We teach you the long haul. You see, there is a price of a stock that is whispering to us. It's called the intrinsic price, I-N-T-R-I-N-S-I-C, intrinsic price. It's the underlying true price of the stock. Let me give you an example of this. You, sir, are my son. Don't ask. I was lonely. I have regrets. But right now, you're really a loser, you know? I mean, you don't have a job, you're in the basement eating Cheetos, and you're not going to school, and, you know, you are on the phone with this girl, and last night you said, "Are you sure it's me?" And, you know, things like, you know, I'd sell him to you for $20 right now. I mean, God. But I know damn well that there is a you that is the present value of what you will be. You will be something. You may be the CEO of a company someday, but you sure as hell will be more than you are now. That's the intrinsic value of you. I can't see it. No one's going to trade on it, but I know it's there. That's the intrinsic price. From day to day, stocks are doing all kinds of stupid stuff, up and down and up and down and all that kind of stuff. But there is something underlying the intrinsic price. That's what we are looking for in finance. And that is looking deep inside the company, not at accounting statements. We take their numbers and we have to do all kinds of twisting of them. We also have to look at economic conditions out there and the impact they'll have on a given corporation. We'll look at its management and all of that kind of stuff. We have to do a deep analysis. And then we can hope to hear the whisper of that intrinsic price. Sometimes the market price will be, the stock will be overvalued. Sometimes it will be undervalued. And that's just the way it is. Now, we do have a few mechanisms by which we can kind of see when it's over or undervalued. And I'll show you those. In other words, when would be the opportunity to buy it? But we're certainly not teaching you about short run. We want you to take that longer haul approach, eventually to your whole life, but at least for investments, right, in the current period. You don't listen to the talking heads on financial news networks. You don't go to cesspools like Wikipedia for knowledge. You are looking for deeper, meaningful knowledge because you are going to have to be the people who lead the others, the ones who don't have the time, don't have the patience, or don't even have the intelligence to know what is really going on under the noise. That's what your job is as college graduates from a ranked university like Illinois State University. So this is where I'm taking you. And again, one of the important parts of this is that I will have you know how to look at the numbers so that you can make your own judgments, your own decisions. Rely on not opinion, but on judgment. And not have to worry about it. The world has always been full of promises of empowerment. You sign up for my service, my newsletter, my website, and we will empower you. Empowerment is the sales pitch. Dependency is the price you pay. So I'm going to take you on another route here. So let's look at the numbers for the first time. And I'll be telling you, I should point this out. I will pour words at you and terms and concepts. Don't sweat. I will be doing this every day. At the beginning, we'll do let's look at the numbers. Today, I'm going to be very focused on let's look at the numbers and just keep learning from me every day. I was a trader. I owned a penny stock house. I was a consultant for enough years that I got myself in so deep that I'm lucky to even be alive and not spending the rest of my life in prison being some hard timer's old lady. So I do tell you this, not so that you are dependent on me, so that you are dependent upon yourself and what you know. The first thing to tell you is this. Last night, while you were asleep, the markets were still clocking over on the East Asian side of the world. That was the day for them, they were trading on the Tokyo Exchange, on the Hong Kong Exchange. And then as the sun began to set there, it was rising in Europe, and the lights went on in the trading screens in Paris, in Germany, in Switzerland. And then a little while later, the sun came up in the United Kingdom, and the lights went on, and the London Exchange came online. And as it was closing over in Asia. And then a few hours later, the sun started rising on the East Coast, and the New York Stock Exchange opened, and the bell rang. And then the sun slipped across the country, and then it finally began to set in California, and it was rising in Japan. And Tokyo came to life again. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the world is trading. And these amounts of money are not in the millions or the billions. They are in the trillions of dollars every day flowing around the world. And most people live their lives and have no clue about all of these different rivers flowing into oceans that flow across the planet day and night. This is how it works. At night, when I have monitors on, and I can just look over a monitor and see what's happening in Tokyo. They're all awake and they're trading live live stream from the Tokyo Exchange, the Hong Kong Exchange, and all that. And then I can look at others. I can go and look at the Paris Exchange. I can look at the CAC 40. I can go then look at the FTSE 100. And then the lights come on here as I'm getting into my office at about 7:30 in the morning here. It's all happening. This is our world. It is not the world of the people who get up and drag themselves to their refrigerator and then maybe take a toke of pot and then wander off to work and then work their 8 to 5 jobs. This is a world that is alive all the time. And this is our part of that world where things are clicking. Now, understand this. Exchanges are generally huge. Like the New York Stock Exchange. You may have seen that trading floor there. Yeah, everyone yelling and throwing papers and screaming at each other and all that kind of stuff. That's a physical platform. That's a physical exchange. And they're all over the world. Now, in other countries, generally speaking, an exchange would be called a bourse. B-O-U-R-S-E, a bourse. But it's an exchange, and you hear me call them exchanges too. The thing of it is, though, that these are huge, and oftentimes, it would be nice to say, well, what did the New York Stock Exchange do today? But that would be a huge thing, and so oftentimes, you will have what are called indexes of exchanges. It's a sample of stocks on that exchange that are sort of representative of the overall exchange. Now, you can tell whether it's an exchange or just an index, because an index will have some numbers after it that say how many stocks are in this sample. And generally speaking, for things like the NYSE, we have different ones for different parts of the NYSE. But let me introduce you to a little bit of this right now. On this front screen, if I could shrink this down enough, come on, there we go. I do apologize, this may be a little small here, but okay, let me try one up. Nope, gonna have to take it down. Okay, let's start in East Asia. The Nikkei 225, that is 225 stocks on the Tokyo Exchange. They sort of are representative. Whatever happens there, that's the sort of what the whole exchange did for the day. Two words here. If a market is going down, we say that it is a bear day. If you are sour on the market, you're a bearish investor. If you don't like a certain stock, you would say, well, I'm bearish on that one. Now, on the other hand, you are an optimist. I think the markets are all going to go up. You are a bullish investor. If stocks are going up for the day, we say it's a bull market. So again, what is it if the stocks are going up? What kind of market is it?
Bullish.
Bull. No. Don't say bull, say bull.
Bull.
Not convincing. Okay, bull. And we are bullish investors, or we are bearish. You can see that the Nikkei 225 is telling us that Tokyo was bullish last night, in the middle of the night. It was a bullish market. The bulls were beating the bears. Now understand, there are bulls and bears at all times. You and you are on opposite sides. You are a bear, you are a bull. You're trying to sell, you're trying to buy. Whoever wins, that's which way the market goes. So on any given day, there are bulls and there are bears, and they are fighting against each other, buying and selling to try to win the day. And the competition is fierce. The trades are happening second to second in these markets. And so in other words, it's like the equilibrium clearing price. Okay, I'm trying to sell a whole lot and there aren't too many buyers, so that would tend to make the price slide downward. The bears are winning. But if there are not too many sellers and there are a lot of bulls trying to buy, then that would tend to ratchet up the price. So at any given time, it's just what is the balance of the trades. And that's why that price is just jerking up and down. Notice how that can't be an intrinsic price. The actual underlying value of a company isn't going up and down second to second. That's a market. And all of its jerks up from the bulls, jerks down from the bears. So that's why the market price is different from the intrinsic price. The market price is just being driven purely by information. If there's more good information than bad information, you'll see bullish sentiment overall. If there is bad information more than there is good information at any given moment, then you will have market prices going down. The bears are going to win. There's more bearish information than bullish. And that's absolutely important because it excludes the possibility that history matters at all. There is nothing in a price that has not already been eaten and digested by the markets. Let me give you an example of this. You, sir, you put $100 into a stock and now it has fallen to $10. And you come to me and you say, what should I do? And I say, well, what's your goal here? And you say, well, I want to at least make back my $100. And I'm going to ask you one question. Where is that $100? The answer is that $100 is with Jesus. It's gone. It's up there. You know, you don't have it. Well, where's that $100? Well, it's in the stock. No, the stock is $10. Why don't you go up to some market maker and say, I want my $100. He's going to say, kiss my ass. That's exactly what he'll say. He got your lunch money. And now you're standing there crying. Remember the 11th commandment I taught you on Monday? Do you remember the 11th commandment? Thou shalt not be a whiny little bitch. You got $10. Your buy or your sell is based upon what you think that stock price is going to do from $10. Hold it. You believe that the stock price will go above $10. Well, where's my $100? I told you where it is. And you have to die to go and see it, and they're not going to let you touch it, even after you die. Now, it sounds like I'm being harsh here, but I'm trying to get you into the feel of our world, my world out there, where it is moment to moment. If you think, well, I'm going to look at this stock chart over the last year and that'll tell me something. No, it's not. Whatever information is in those little dots there for the price, closing price on days before now, has no meaning to where the price is going to go from here. That's why it is we work in fundamental analysis. Technical analysis, look at charts and things like that. Fundamental analysis, you ask harder questions. Okay, let's take those accounting statements, let's rip them apart and put them back together so they tell us something that we care about. And then from there, we can then look at management. We can look at the competitive environment. We can look at the economy that is coming down the road. That will tell us where the stock price is going to be, better than looking at something that is a dusty, rotting corpse called the stock price yesterday. This is, in other words, we are not looking to make the quick buck. That is children's games. We are the adults in the room where we are looking at long hauls. Because over time, that stock price will be always searching for its intrinsic price. The day-to-day movements of it are nothing but the prologue to the actual underlying value. On any given day, I look at you, and over a period of time, but I know that's not the you that is the story of your life and the story of you in 20, 30, 40 years. That's how stock markets work. If you want to play in that short-term world, by all means, my former students who are now traders in Chicago and New York, we are more than happy to take away your lunch money. We're more than happy to take away your retirement money. We'll do it. And we will help the politicians fashion policies that help us do that. That's what we do. Why, Mr. Shark, why did you eat me? Because I'm a shark, fool. That's the way it works in our world. Now, let me go over here and let's look at a couple of others of these numbers. By the way, before I forget, why don't you log into attendance, in attendance radar. Get that done for me while I am getting things set up here. Almost forgot. Oh, yeah. If you are going to have problems with attendance radar, just come up after class. Remember, if you send me an email without having talked to me after class, I'm going to ignore it. But if you're having a problem with attendance radar, just come up. I'm going to close the class a little early today so that you can get yourselves right with the attendance radar. Whoa, good numbers coming up. Okay. Now, while you are getting that to work, now if you get an answer, something shows you need an access code, there's not an access code. You get out of it and try to come back in and see what happens with it. Okay, while you're doing that, let me just talk to you a little more about these markets. One thing that is important in markets, in finance, is we really don't care about numbers. Well, the Dow went down 800 points. Yeah, well, what is that as a percent? Who cares? The Dow is a huge number. If it goes down 800 points, that might be a 1%. Think about it this way. If you've made an investment, if you, madam, have made an investment, $10 in a stock, and the stock goes up by a dollar, you've made 10%. But if that was a $100 stock and it goes up by a dollar, that's just a 1%. So the percentages is really all we care about. And that's a good clue if you are listening to some financial news service or something like that that talks, well, the S&P went up 300 points today. That's irrelevant. That's meaningless. You need to know what percentage it went up by, not the number, because the numbers on these are very different. So let's say a 500-point rise in the S&P 500 is not comparable to a 500-point rise in the NASDAQ because they're two different number bases. So percentages are what we're going to be looking at. And as I look here, I covered East Asia. Nikkei 225, that's 200, that's an index. That's an index. It's not the exchange. It's not the Tokyo exchange. It's just an index on that exchange of 225 stocks on that exchange. And it did have a strong bullish day, 1.50% up. Now, the Hang Seng went up more than 0.5% today. So it looks like East Asia was pretty bullish today, and it should stay that way because they are sort of those countries, their industries are more or less filling in the gap that we just handed over and gave up on a year ago. We just walked away from it. So now these countries and their companies are just flourishing. So I'm bullish on those markets, but generally speaking, you just have to think about the political dynamics, the economic differentials between countries, trading agreements and trading patterns, management styles, the political environment of the different countries, and that helps you to formulate not opinions, but actual judgments. You get away from saying, I think, I feel, I believe. You put that away in the toy box, and you start coming out in your work with my judgment is, or from my analysis, I can conclude that. You start using a different language to show that you are above the masses. And if that sounds elitist, well, it is. We're the leaders, and we have to give bread and circuses to those who choose to be less. Now, let me go over here. This is CAC 40. That is 40 companies on the Paris Exchange, or the Paris Bourse. A representative, I mean, L'Oreal and companies like that are in the 40. I'm trying to think off the top of my head of some of the other companies in that. But it's kind of a good pulse of what's going on the Paris Exchange. And then you've got over here, we've got FTSE 100. That is 100 companies on the London Exchange. And you can see that the London Exchange, it was up about 0.5%. And the CAC, kind of the odd about the CAC, you notice that it was bullish, it was up, but it slid through the day and it closed at below where it closed yesterday. So yeah, something was some kind of drain of negative information just kept bleeding the bulls, and the bears kind of took advantage of it as the day went on. You know, that happens on some exchanges. One thing I will point out to you, percentages. If you've got a percentage up or a percentage down that's less than, say, 0.20%, that's almost not worth worrying about, really. You get excited when you see a number that is maybe above 0.3 or something like, or below, positive 0.3 or a negative 0.3%. So don't, you know, get panicky if you see a couple of negatives, negative 0.1%. It was down negative 0.1%. That's almost like random noise. The bears won, barely won the day's competition. Okay, now let me take you over here to the U.S. First of all, the big 800-pound gorilla exchange, and it is a physical exchange, is the New York Stock Exchange. It is a vast physical platform of trading. You've probably seen it. It's just one of those people screaming at each other, throwing papers in the air, barking and all that. It's an open cry system where this is a kind of a simplified example. Okay, I'm your broker. You call me, you say, I want to buy 100 shares of Wendy's at $8 or better, okay? Good till cancel, GTC, okay? So I'm your broker. I call the runner. I call the floor of the exchange, okay? I need 100 shares of Wendy's at $8 or better. In other words, $8 or lower. because I've got a buy order here. So you go out to the market maker station, someone who has Wendy's stock, and you say, I need 100 shares at $8 or better. And she says, kiss my ass. No, $8.50. That's what I'll do right now, is $8.50. And you say, I can't do that. Anyone. You say, I can do 40 shares at $8. Okay, that clears 40 of the 100, so I've still got to go 60 on it. I go, and you say, I can take like 40 shares myself, okay? I've cleared out that much. And then you say, 20 at 8, fine. And so I've got the order cleared, and then I can confirm it with you, and then we go on our ways, and we fill out the tickets, and we get the transfer of ownership. And that's happening in real time in maybe about 5 seconds. And that's a very simple order. Not even 5 seconds. This is how an exchange works. It is simply just getting orders for sells and buys and getting the best price. If you're selling it, I'll get the highest price I can for you. If you're buying it, I'll get the lowest price I can. I might not be able to get all at the same price, but you'll see one final price that I got it at in your trade confirmation and all of that. That's how it works, and I will get you into more depth in how you actually place orders so that you can have the best possible chance at getting your order filled and getting it filled at a good price. And we'll talk about how you make your orders. Do you put good till cancel, good for the day, things like that. At market means just take buy whatever price or sell at whatever price is prevailing at that moment in time. All that kind of stuff I'll talk about later in the course, and I'll show you how to do orders and do some exotic little tricks and all that kind of stuff. But right now, first things first, the Dow 30. It's an index. You know it because it's got a 30. It's not an exchange. The Dow is 30, is 30 of the biggest companies on earth. Monsters. And it used to be called the Dow Industrials. But as time has gone along, many of the industrial companies have slipped in their value compared to entertainment companies. So it's no longer the Dow Industrials, it's the Dow 30. I mean, I think the originators of the Dow Industrial 30 would turn over in their graves if they knew that one of the companies on the Dow 30 is now known by a giant mouse. But here we are in the 21st century. So the Dow 30, though, these are big, low-risk companies. They're not going to go away. They are so fat, so big, that information really doesn't affect them too much. They just bloop, bloop. So you won't generally see them be very reactive up or down on a given day. Compared to the next one I would feature for you is the S&P 500. That's 500 of the great big companies of the earth. You take their value together, and you've probably got about 70% of the value of the entire planet in those 500. They are, for the most part, monopolistic competitors, if you remember that term from economics. They are scrappy. They are giant. And most of you will work for an S&P 500 company, or your company will be, at least to some extent, dependent upon the fortunes of the S&P 500. It is an index. As a matter of fact, it is such a good representation of the world that we use it as a proxy for the world's performance. It's just like that. And now, the last one I'll show you is the NASDAQ. You notice that there is no number after it. That is an actual exchange. It is not a physical platform exchange. It's all electronic. Everything happens online. And when I had my little penny stock house, I had a NASDAQ terminal. And everything, you know, there would be a flash across the screen, some penny stock. Someone wants to sell 600 shares of it. And you see the market makers who had some of that stock or wanted to buy some of it. Well, I'll take 400 of those. And you have a few other market makers. Well, okay, I'm good for 20. And that it was just essentially an electronic version of the New York Stock Exchange. The one thing is that the NYSE, they are all huge companies. The NASDAQ is mostly very small, high-risk companies. They're scrappy. They are very risky. Investing in NASDAQ stocks is generally pretty risky. Now, here's the thing. If a stock trading symbol has one, two, or three letters, it's NYSE. If it has four letters, it's NASDAQ. Now, that makes for an interesting thing because you will see some four-letter companies, four-letter trading symbols, that are huge companies. MSFT, Microsoft, MNZN, NFLX. These are all huge companies, but they have four letters. Well, that's because they started as small companies on the NASDAQ, and they just decided they were going to stay there. They weren't going to go over to the NYSE with all of its application requirements and the money you have to pay them and all that kind of stuff. They just stayed there. So essentially, you've got this giant field of little dwarves running around, oh boy, oh boy. And then you've got some giants just boom, boom in there. But generally speaking, you will see a reactivity hierarchy. Whatever happens as far as information goes for a given day, the Dow will not react, usually, not react much up or down. The S&P and 500 will react more up or down, and the NASDAQ will react the most up or down. Now, there are days when there are exceptions to that, and that can tell us some things. So if we look today, we see that the Dow closed, I think they're closed now, closed 0.12% down, just a little bit. The S&P 500 was down more, a little more than 0.5%. And the NASDAQ took an absolute ass bath today at down more than 1%, a full percent. You see it? How risk, the greater the risk, the greater the up or down in the price. This is a rock solid rule of finance, and it is highly linked to physics, the equation for the relationship between expected return and risk is the same equation that you would find in for a completely different thing in physics textbooks. So we're not doing this in some world of fantasies and opinions. This is all what I teach you is all actually based on the laws of the universe. I mean, Newton's laws are always in play here. Kepler, even one of Kepler's laws, I think. But and laws of fluid dynamics. It's all physics equations. And fortunately, we have Excel, so we don't have to look at those stupid equations much anymore. As elegant as they are. Excuse me. Now, let me show you something. Take you down here to commodities. And I'm going to break them down. Now, back many, many years ago, I was in the oil and gas business down in Texas in the Patch. And recently, this was playing out last semester, you've had an old game being played by OPEC where they flood the markets with oil. They just dump it into the markets. And the purpose of that is supply goes up, price goes down, and that effectively wipes out the smaller oil producers. If you're getting... Well, you see, with a Wildcat operation, we had a price of oil. If you went below that, it wasn't worth us. It sure as hell wasn't worth it for us to go out and punch holes, because usually we punch dry holes. And even if the operating wells, if they started acting up and the price was on oil was too low, we weren't going to try to do any kind of work to make it come back to life, because it just wasn't worth it for us. And essentially what happens is, if I can't get enough for my oil, I'm going to be out of business. I can't pay my loans. I can't pay my rent. If I'm a landman, I've got all these obligations. I'm out of business. So the OPEC countries were producing huge amounts of oil, and that was driving down the price of oil. And it's come up somewhat in the last 48 hours because there's rumblings from Washington about another attack on Iran, which would, if it actually happened, cause prices of oil to reach $90 to $100 a barrel. It would be absolutely disastrous, because the first thing Iran would do is mine the Strait of Hormuz, and would also start firing Sunburn and Silkworm missiles and some of those newer ones, hypersonics, at every tanker it could get in its sights. So yeah, we're getting a little bit of probability of high oil prices becoming to be embedded. It's not much right now. You still got oil down around $60 a barrel. Now, crude oil here is sort of like an average of all the oils. And there are all these different grades of oil. Now, you've got grades like sour crude, the kind of stuff we pulled out of the ground in where we punch holes. It stunk like hell. It was thick as sludge, and it was hot. It was low value. It took a lot of cracking to make it worth anything. But then you had higher grades. Now, the highest grade is Brent crude, Brent light sweet Brent. It is the sweetest of the oils. Very lightweight, not thick, and just wonderful stuff. Low cost to crack it, and I'll get into more of that as the course goes along. But anyway, lower cost, I should say, to crack it. But these are still pretty low prices. You'll probably see gasoline prices go up somewhat over the next couple of weeks if the threats and the counter threats don't stop. You'll start seeing gas prices going up. Now, let me take you over to metals. One that is absolutely essential is copper. Copper makes industry happen. Copper pipes, copper fittings, copper everything. And so we keep kind of a wary eye on the price of copper, and it is going up. One reason it's going up is because we've pissed off the world, and all of those copper mines in other countries that we are now pissing off, they are going to, you're tariffing our stuff. Well, we're just going to find other markets for it, and for ours. Well, we'll use our own natural resources. Well, go ahead and try to find more of that in our ground here in the country. Now, here's the one, silver. Silver is mostly driven by supply and demand dynamics, because silver is used industrially and it's used in cosmetic applications. So silver is mostly pulling and ebbing and flowing in price because of supply and demand, supply of and demand for the product. Gold is a different animal, because there are industrial and cosmetic uses, obviously, for gold, but it is also the speculator's safe harbor. If the world is going to hell, you're going to buy gold. If the world is going to go past hell, then you buy more gold. And that's what's been happening. Last semester, I had the students watch gold cross 3,000. And then cross 4,000. No one would have ever imagined that the price per ounce of gold would do that. And now in this semester, right now, the price of gold is 464. 4,647. More than $4,600. It just keeps going up. And there is no stopping it. And why is it going up? It's not because, well, people want more gold jewelry. It's because there is a group of investors, we call them gold bugs, who are just buying it like there's no tomorrow, because they see not just a little bit of problems down the road. When gold gets to this level, they're seeing a frickin' apocalypse coming. Do we believe them? Well, you pays your penny and you takes your choices. But the fact that the price of gold is just keeps going up like this is a warning sign for that these are not people who operate on feelings or beliefs or opinions. These people are in it for blood. You're putting money into gold because you're not, and that means you're not putting it into stocks and bonds. You're not putting it into real estate. You're not putting it into a nice car to put in your garage. They're buying this, and gold really doesn't have anything other than the value we put on it. It's pretty, it's shiny, but it's not even the best thing for industrial purposes, metal for industrial purposes, other than for a few things. So the reality is that that price is going up because very greedy, very smart investors are throwing money into it right now. That's what I can offer you in this course, is the windows through which we can see the future darkly, but at least we're not standing here in a fog violating the 11th commandment. That's all I have for you today. I thank you for being here.